Hi, I'm Kate.
And I'm Lori. We've always thought that the most compelling story strikes the perfect balance between an honest look at the mess of life and the humor that can be found in the mess. To be perfectly honest, we don't really know how to live life without both the humor and the authenticity.
Our podcast might be a little bit of whiplash at times. We can spin from hard and deep to humor and laughing on a dime. The hard will be really hard, and the truths we share are the ugliest of humanity. We don't intend to make it seem like it's all fine or to pretty up the pain, but we also know that the joy we found is all the more profound because of the pain.
So we hope you can stick with us through the ugly, because there will also be joy and hope and humor. Welcome to The Ugly Truth About the Girl Next Door.
Hi, welcome back to our podcast, The Ugly Truth About the Girl Next Door. I'm Kate.
And I'm Lori.
And we are back.
We are. We just had to start over because Silas is literally laying on Kate's computer.
I don't even have my outline typing anymore.
Yeah. He's typing things.
He's doing so it's good, great. Though. Yeah, totally yeah. good. We will Excellent. Post a picture of yes, beautiful Silas. So we are back podcasting. We were talking about the fact that we feel like in recent months it has felt a little bit like getting Mezzo off the ground and going to Boston and, you know, putting together our training materials and speaking engagements and forming this nonprofit has kind of taken us a little bit away from podcasting. And I was having a little bit of an emotional reaction to that reality today just because podcasting is the thing that has kept me the safest. It's the thing that has provided power and voice. It's the thing that has built our strength in numbers. Just kind of coming back to it and feeling like, you know, the podcast is where it all started. And we've told the story repeatedly, especially lately, that the podcast was an act of desperation. And then it grew into this thing that, you know, now we're educating the world and building our army of helpers and all that. But it still was an act of desperation. And so
and still is.
And
Such
still
an
is.
Important measure for safety.
Yeah, it really still is. And so I think that's really our episode today is just talking about that reality that safety is still very much, you know, at the forefront of our minds at all times. And that while, yeah, we're moving forward and we're doing really cool things and we've, you know, again, shared about Boston and we've shared about Mezzo, we've shared about kind of the things that are coming up for us, which are all very exciting and, you know, we would never have some of those opportunities had it not been for the podcast. But the podcast is still our place of power and voice. It is still our platform to build our army.
But we use that word carefully.
Yeah,
right?
We do.
So we do talk a lot about that. And we really have been attentive to, first, not disrespecting the actual armed forces who are literally putting their bodies and lives on the line to protect other people.
Absolutely.
But also recognizing that we have been very careful about not inspiring any kind of aggression or violence. And so even the term army can sound very aggressive, perhaps. But as we unpack that, we really realize that it's the right word.
It is. But yeah. And I, you know, we had this conversation about using that word and, not wanting to incite violence, which of course we don't at all condone any type of violence on or offline. But it is the right word because the offenders and the people who are committing these crimes, who have committed these crimes, they are fighting with no regard for safety or care of anyone else. Mm-hmm. We can't take kind of a sidelined, gentle approach, you know, hey, let's talk it out when someone's trying to destroy us.
I mean, honestly, everybody understands this, right? You have to meet a certain level of equivalent force in order for it to be successful. If someone is trying to beat me up or attack me with a weapon, I can't use my strong words to defend myself. That's just not going to work. And nobody wants to be in a position where that kind of an intense response is required, but we haven't chosen this position we're in.
No, absolutely. No, I feel like actually on a total side note tangent that we may want to cut, but that reality that we have not really chosen any of this is very important to be said. I do feel like people have have thoughts. There are people out there who have had conversations with me and you who mm-hmm. have said, well, you know, what did you expect with, you know,
started a podcast,
right? You opened yourself up for criticism. No, I mean, yes and no. We didn't choose to start a podcast just for the hell of it. We didn't choose to start a podcast because it sounded like fun. We chose to start a podcast out of an act of desperation because what else was left to do, right? We've told the story. We've gone through all the different details, all the different escape attempts, all the different people we tried to ask for help, all the different law enforcement agencies, churches, leaders in our community.
We did everything short of a podcast exactly. before it came to this.
So did we choose to do a podcast? Sure. Did we, actively make that choice? Yes, of course. We created it. But
the alternative was for you to continue to be unsafe with exactly. no accounting for it.
Exactly.
That was simply not an option.
Exactly. So it's very interesting to me that people who say that to us, like, well, what did you expect? You started a podcast, as if we are simply content creators or,
right.
you know, podcasters trying to shed light on something and opened ourselves up for scrutiny.
And by the way, the threats, if it's always necessary, I think, to keep going back to the threats predate the podcast. It's not like the podcast created a circumstance in which the threats
were happening. Oh, no. Right. And I feel like that's a point that is missed far too often is, again, people say to us frequently, you know, yeah, the threats really amped up when the podcast started. No, the threats amped up during, you know, that separation time. The
right.
threats amped up because I was saying no, because we had gone to the churches, because we had said, can you help us?
Because you were breaking the cardinal rule of
talking about it. But not publicly.
No.
The threats amped up because I was talking about it to people that I thought could help.
Right.
The churches, the chapel, the
Me.
Community members, you. Yeah, that's... So, again, yes, the threats were happening, predated the podcast by a long shot.
So, what choice did we have?
Right.
We could not just stay in a space where you were not safe. We had done everything short of a podcast, and so a podcast it was.
Right.
So...
So people a lot of times talk to us or have talked to us about ignoring the naysayers, especially when it comes to social media. We all know, you know, I actually think so much about social media, and my children do not have social media. They will never have social media while living under my roof as far as I can help it. It has such great benefits for reaching we have, you know, I actually looked at our statistics the other day, and our listeners from the United States is actually right now only at about 90%, which I think is wild. When we first started, it was like 90, well, you know, like 100%, then 99%. And it slowly is like creeping down in that this is global. And so, you know, social media is definitely responsible for that.
Sure.
Good,
Absolutely.
Bad, ugly, whatever it is, you know, the reach that we have been able to have and the connections we've been able to make is purely because of social media. So it has its place, it has its time, but it's also very easy for people to hide behind a computer blasting people on social media, right? It's
right.
very easy to hide behind your phone and
say ridiculous things,
say anonymous things. You get to stay anonymous, right? We have taken the approach of not remaining anonymous, of putting ourselves out there to tell the truth, but there's a ton of people who don't. And so we know all about the naysayers. We take everything we read on social media with a grain of salt.
We really expect nothing less from the offenders and their supporters, really.
What
do we think they're going to say? So we're not shocked by that stuff. And no, we're not going to directly engage in things that do not directly affect your safety.
Exactly. But then there's the things that do directly affect my safety. So first of all, there's no neutral here. I think we also want to talk that through of like there's a lot of people who just throw their hands up and say, I don't know, and I'm not going to take a side. For the most part, I don't even know those people, but there are people in my world who do. I do know them. They're part of, you know, family. They're part of friends. No longer friends, who have kind of taken this stance of, well, I'm not really sure, so I just throw my hands up and say I'm neutral, right? That's not an option when the stakes are so high. I kind of compared it earlier to the idea that like your political views are different from mine, right? People look at this as like, well, your view is different from mine. No, it's not a political view. It's actually my life and safety. And like, it's not, you know, it's not a chess game. It's not.
It's not a game at all.
No, it's not a game at all. Yeah. It's, you know, yeah.
It's not something that someone can have an opinion on.
No.
It is simply what is true.
It's truth or not truth. Yeah, it's just like there is no middle. There is a middle, but.
We are the middle.
We are the middle.
There, you can't just
There's
say,
no neutral.
Right, there's no neutral.
Yeah.
Right.
But so, yeah.
We can't ignore the people who are on the other side, though, actively trying to destroy us on the other side of the battlefield.
Exactly. They are literally doing everything they can, twisting everything they can to discredit, to demean, not just us, but all survivors, mm-hmm. really. They are attacking us with every weapon that they have. You know, and people are like, ignore the naysayers. Well, yes, for sure. There are people who are just truly ignorant on social media, who it's like, you're not worth my time, energy, effort, breath, any of those things.
Right.
But then there's the people that are, exactly opposite of us on the battlefield. So that we can't ignore because every action has a reaction. So everything that we do
or don't do, or every issue that we address or fail to address, there's an outcome.
Right. Exactly. And I feel like we've tried really hard to explain this to some of the people in our space, in our world that have been attempting to help us with the Grace Investigators. We literally screamed at the top of our lungs about this. Every action has a reaction, and your actions also have reactions in the offender community. And so I don't know what's so hard to grasp about that.
And that was part of why it was so infuriating, because to us, we had explained it very clearly to them and talked about historical times when someone's actions had fallout for your safety and talked about current safety concerns. It was unfathomable that they could not grasp that their actions also would have an impact.
Right. And that is still true. I think that's the other thing people don't maybe realize, is that is still true, right? We've talked about, you know, past history, how that played out. We've also talked about more recent history with the chapel, the day that John Camardo from the chapel in Buffalo went to, you know, directly confront my parents. The very same day, I received a heinous threat basically indicating that had happened and that I was going to now pay for that.
And mind you, we had asked for us to have a heads up before that conversation happened.
No
heads up was given.
Right. So we've talked about those actions having a reaction. We've talked about, you know, Cornerstone let all the offenders back in the church and what happened, right? Even though some of the written threats have stopped, which is amazing, which again, mostly because of the podcast,
because they can't get access right now.
They have no access, right? Yeah, which is...
You go nowhere alone. Yeah. You don't stay home alone.
Yeah. It's exhausting. But it doesn't mean that these people have given up. And I think that's an important thing, too, is just to kind of highlight. I mean, just recently I had an unknown AirTag attached to my car. I've had a black truck following me. I've had a black truck sitting outside my house. You know, they have very long memories. They do not just quit. These are not the type of traffickers or offenders to just say, oh God, this is way too dangerous for me, that I'm just going to let go and let her live her life. This is not the kind of offender we're talking about here.
No, because it's about more than, okay, this is awful to say, but it's about more than just the money.
Yeah. Oh,
yes,
yeah,
100%. It's about them, but it's about the power and control. It's about the manipulation. For them, it is a game.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It is. So, yeah, we keep kind of talking about the idea of this offender community. And Lori is actually reading a book right now that I started to read and was like, this is all the information. Another survivor actually suggested it for us, called Organized Sexual Abuse by Michael Salter. Lori, tell us who Michael Salter is, because I know that you know more about him than I do.
He is a commercial sexual exploitation expert out of Australia, actually, and specifically around cult and organized groups of traffickers, abusers, kind of the sadistic and organized kinds of abuse. He's done research on it. He teaches at a university in Australia, and is well understood to be the, I think, the global expert in organized sexual abuse groups. So his book, Organized Sexual Abuse, is one of the few texts that exist out there. Again, that as the clinician, that's been a great source of frustration. There's another book that is written by someone here in the States called Healing the Unimaginable. And that's another book that is available that references a lot of these same things. Mm-hmm. But there are very few resources available for clinicians to look at this, because even the clinical community, we have a hard time grasping this. So yeah. We've said this statistic repeatedly. Polaris, which is, I think, understood to be a very reputable organization in the anti-trafficking world who does research, their statistic said that 42% would tell you that their first trafficker was a family member. 42%. But yet there are not resources for family-controlled trafficking.
Yeah.
So...
yeah, reading even just the introduction of this book, it was like the way that they describe the terminology, the way that they describe the complexities of this type of abuse is really on point. And again, I don't think I can read it because it was very like overwhelming to see it in black and white. But it was, yeah, like, yep, that tracks and that tracks and that tracks and, you know.
Well, a lot of the stuff in the intro also really landed heavy, because it was exactly, he was talking about our experience of how difficult it is to get the community to realize that this is real, yeah. That it's possible.
Yeah.
One of the quotes is, organized abuse, this is again from the book by Michael Salter, organized abuse is frequently associated by Westerners with ethnic communities and developing countries, with the implication that they are more dangerous and less civilized, or it is alleged to be committed by groups considered perverted and pathological, right? So regular people, they can't, the understanding in Western culture is that it's the others. This is happening in other communities,
which
other countries.
Which we've talked about.
Absolutely.
Ad nauseum.
And there it was in black and white.
Yeah.
And by the way, for us in Buffalo, that's why it is the International Institute that is the primary anti-trafficking response organization here in Buffalo. Like, trafficking is sort of the add-on to working with the refugee and new entry people.
But also isn't appropriate help for someone like me.
Right.
Or for the many, many survivors that we have talked to with my same similar story.
Right.
So another quote from that book, which I thought was just, it's right there, is, you know, if you don't believe that it is possible for children to be sexually abused in this way by the men in their lives, then you don't see the signs even when they are staring at you in the face.
How many times have we said that?
How many times?
And
I mean, literally, it is. It's wild. Mm-hmm. So yes, every action has a reaction. And we feel like a little bit, we've been trying to help people understand that this is a community of offenders. This is a group of men working in concert, still to this day. This is not a one-off, you know, pedophile. This is not a one-off abuser, in which there is, you know, that person is going to ultimately just give up and walk away. This is an organized effort. These offenders are talking to each other. They are communicating. We know that. We've heard that. We've seen it happen. We've
seen the indicators.
Yeah, we've seen lots of indicators of that. We see it. We see you. And we're not stupid. And so, and again, my lived experience is just that there is nothing that I can do that goes unnoticed or unchecked by them. It is a level of stalking in which they are following in such closeness that it's terrifying. It's terrifying, honestly.
Right. And that's their intent.
And that's their intent. They want me to know that they are always watching. How many of the threats that I received said, we're watching you, mm-hmm. we see you, I see you, things like that. That's the intent. So we are watching that play out on platforms like social media at this point. Right. They do not have access to me anymore. They cannot just walk up to my house without being on security footage. I do not have a place of work in which I go to at this point. And so there is nowhere for them to leave a paper written threat. And so now they have shifted the tide and turned to social media. They are doing things like leaving air tags on my vehicle when I'm places, things like that. So all in the same vein of we're watching you and you do not get to get out. So
even though we're doing these really positive and great things, we're still slogging through all of that, and the amount of determination that it takes to keep going forward while you're kind of carrying all of that too, it's a lot. And yeah. I guess we were kind of talking about that. A lot of this is like somebody with an illness, chronic illness or whatever, that, you know, everything you do has a side effect. And it's important that the survivor or patient gets to choose their treatment approach and therefore what side effects they're willing to tolerate. But for the survivor, sometimes the other people are just making decisions that now have some kind of side effect that you're living with.
Yep.
So it would be essentially a doctor making a decision for a patient and just saying, oh, oops, you're just gonna have to deal with that side effect.
Yeah. Sorry that affected you that way, but just what we do.
Right.
That's just what we do.
This is how we do it. It's how we've always done it.
Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. I mean, it's also kind of like a chronic illness in the sense of you have to get on with your life. You have mm-hmm. to keep going. But everything you do is harder because so you're simultaneously dealing with that.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Everything is so much harder. I'm in the middle right now of birthday season with my kids. All mm-hmm. three of my kids have birthdays within 6 weeks of each other. Like, whose great idea was that, right? but it's exhausting. I have to think through my safety plan for every single day. I have to think through, okay, how am I going to get the things that I need to throw another birthday party? How am I going to, you know, I'm mm-hmm. my Amazon delivery man knows me personally because I order a lot of stuff. Yeah. Like every party supplies. I don't run to Party City. I don't run to, you know, wherever else you get stuff. Yeah. And not that that's like the worst thing in the world, but it's not just that. It's not being able to stop at the store for milk. It's, you know, being in North Tonawanda and feeling like I got to run into Pelicano's for Tapenade, but I can't do that by myself. Or I have to run into Sam's Club for cupcakes, but I can't do that by myself.
Right. And I'm right here. And right. It's tempting to just do it and right. hope for the best.
Right.
But I can't do that.
I can't do that. Right. So, yeah, it is exhausting. It's exhausting. And I constantly, as a joke, say to my husband and to Lori, it's very fun being me right now. and I say that with, you know, the air of humor that I generally have. But, yeah, it's not very fun some days, most days.
It's hard.
It's really hard. But, yeah, there's, you know, every choice that I make has potential fallouts. Every choice that we make also as podcasters has potential fallout. You know, when we are putting together an episode or when we are feeling like we want to talk about something. And again, the podcast has been this place of power and voice and building our army and our strength in numbers, which has all been really positive and good and hard. You know, it can be both. We have to think through, and I feel like we keep adding to this list. Like, I think that's also part of it is we keep, you know, we started with just truly just safety. That was it. And then it was like, okay, well, you know.
Now we have supporters. So,
How are survivors going to hear this? How are our supporters going to hear this? And then we had naysayers. Okay, how are they going to hear this? We know the offenders are listening. So, how are they going to hear this? And now we have people in the middle with us. And, you know, how are they going to perceive this? What is going to happen to that support should we not say it right? And that, for me, is super triggering. If I don't do it right, if I don't say it right, then I'm not worthy of getting help.
There's not some book that says, say precisely this in precisely this way. Don't use this word, use that word instead. Do it exactly that. There's no book.
No, there's no guide to do this.
Right.
Right. it's, but the difficult thing is that while we compare it to an illness, like let's say someone had cancer, everybody knows what to do for that,
right?
Right? Everybody knows that, you know, if a young mother has cancer, you start a GoFundMe page, you raise all the money for her and her family, you bring meals, you offer to babysit, you know what to do for that situation. Nobody knows what to do, and we don't know how to ask because we don't know what to do either. And so if we do the GoFundMe, then people look at us like, oh my God, they're doing it for money. If we don't do the GoFundMe, then people don't know how to help, right? I mean, it, no matter what we do, every action has a reaction mm-hmm. in one way or another. So it's exhausting. It is absolutely exhausting, especially with podcasting. Every word that we say right now has to be thought through, processed, and we don't always do it right, but
we are trying.
We are trying.
So hard.
We are trying, and we can't just fold. Like, what they are hoping, what the offenders mm-hmm. are hoping is that we will ultimately just fold and say, this is too damn hard. But we can't do that because every time I've tried to escape, every escape attempt that I have made has ended just like that. This is too hard. I have nowhere else to go. I've been backed into a corner, and what else is left to do? But we can't do that.
No.
We literally can't do that. We're this is the final escape attempt. This has to be the thing that works. And so far it has, but the war is not won. Right. And right. So that is why we keep talking about this army that we are building up, because the war is far from over.
We have experiences with people who we know really are truly in our corner, helping and believing and really trying and all the things. But it's still very hard, even for people who believe us, to fully grasp the difference between a single offender who is abusing a single child, which is still terrible. We're not minimizing that. But these people who are working in concert with one another to achieve that goal of controlling and silencing you, right? Mm-hmm. That's a next level thing. And it is so hard for decent human beings to grasp that. And so therefore it feels like we're constantly needing to, I mean, honestly, even with me, you have to be telling me, showing me mm-hmm. sometimes, like, no, you don't see it the way that the offenders would see that. You don't see it the way that I see that because I've lived A, B, C, D, Z.
Right. Yeah. And we just had this whole conversation, what, a week ago, 2 weeks ago, of that, of like, you know, there is mm-hmm. a time and a place for optimism. Lori is the ultimate ever glasses half full.
Yes, I am.
Oh, my goodness.
Drives are a little crazy sometimes. Not going to lie.
I've never seen anything like it in my life.
So when people ask, how do I do this for so long like this? That's how.
Yeah. And I'm over here like the okay, video. Real.
You're real. You're
yeah.
You're not a pessimist.
No, I'm not. I'm really not. No. I genuinely want to have hope. I genuinely do. But mm-hmm. I also have a lot of experience.
Right.
And not that you don't, but I have a lot of lived experience yes. with this particular group of people, with this particular type of offender. And I do know. And when I compare notes with other survivors mm-hmm. in my support groups and with other survivors that have come forward in the Western New York area, I know that everybody says that nobody has and there's no corroboration, but guess what? There is so much. When I compare notes with those people, they say the exact same thing. Right. So I know that it's not just me in my head trying to, you know, being anxious or being scared. This is real. This is real. But yeah, when there's a time and a place for optimism, and sometimes this ain't it. Like mm-hmm. that's just, right. you know, it, because I know these people and I do know that every action has a reaction, and we can't forget that. We cannot forget that there's not a lot of room for human error. There's not a lot of room right. for, oh, sorry, I didn't mean to mention that, or I didn't mean to say it that way, or I didn't, you know, I didn't mean
to stir the pot. Right.
Yeah.
But.
Right. Yes, for the love.
But I think it's important for people to hear us say, like, you have to coach me on those things. And I'm not like saying like I'm all that in a bag of chips, but I've been in this with you mm-hmm. for a long time, and nobody probably understands more of it than I do
right.
other than you. So if there are other people kind of on a little bit more on the periphery, and we have to provide information of like, please be careful in that zone. It's not an insult. It's just the reality that who's the expert in right. their experience? The survivor.
Right. Exactly. Well, and also in terms of if you're someone who is the helper, right? We mm-hmm. keep talking about building this army of helpers. It took probably 4.5 years for me to yes. be able to say to you, listen, we're done. You're done with the optimism. Oh my goodness. After our party the other day that we had, Evelyn told me that she likes in the bouquet of flowers. Did I tell you this already?
No.
This is funny. In the bouquet of flowers that she was carrying, she said to me that she likes the white ones, but they smell is like so terrible. And she's like, I literally smell them, Mom, and I'm just like, you're done. I'm like, what? She's like, I don't know. Christiana said it to me. Okay. So great.
Love that for her.
Love that for her.
Yes. So sometimes you have to tell me to pump the brakes on the optimism.
But it took a long time. So if you are a helper walking alongside a survivor, they might say it to you once. They're not likely to fight with you, though, because they're also really afraid that you're going to leave.
Right.
Because if they start to make too much of a problem or make it too hard, their experience likely, like for myself, has been that people are like, I don't know what more you want from me. I don't know what to do for you then. So they walk away. Right. And so it is this feeling of like, yeah, you can't make it too hard for people to help or else they won't help. And yet if they don't really understand the situation, how do they help and not make it worse? Right? Like, again, with Grace, our one ask was do not make it worse. Please, for the love of all things holy, do not make it worse. What did they do? Make it worse.
Way worse.
So, yeah, it's just that feeling of wanting to have people understand that that's the reality, that everything that we do, everything that we say, everything that is said or stuff that gets
isn't said. That too, that part's important. So for sometimes people, like our last episode where we talked about the Erie County Sheriff's person showing up at Kate's house, sometimes people are like, oh, I don't know. Are you sure that you really want to go there? Like, well, yes, actually, we need to be able to go there because you can never again be in a space where your power and voice are taken from you.
Yeah.
It's done.
Absolutely.
You're done.
You're done. All of our Boston friends are so proud of us right now. You know, I was saying to Patrick, though, I didn't hear very many accents when we were there.
No, not very strong.
Right?
Yeah, different communities have more or less.
Yeah. There was maybe one person who that we had lunch with that I thought, oh, okay, yeah, she's super,
there it is.
Like, Boston, yeah. But, like, we were saying this because Patrick was trying to do a Boston accent with the lobster that I brought home for Evelyn. And he's terrible at it, so.
With the lobster.
I was like, I don't feel like that's Boston. I feel like that's New York, like Long Island. Like,
I'm not sure that you done is also, that feels more New York than Boston.
Jersey. I feel like that's Jersey Shore.
Jersey Lori is going to be like, you done.
People love our commentary.
Do they though?
Oh my goodness. Anyways.
Okay, so we're done.
You're done.
With people, like, we all have to be conscious that every action has a reaction. And please know we are very conscious of that. There's nothing that we do that is not carefully considered. And so please hear everything through that filter.
Yeah. Lori frequently says to me, no rage posting.
No impulse posting.
And I do usually heed that advice.
Yes,
not always, but usually.
Most of the time. Actually, I feel like you've been more than
me. I have been.
I've been a little bit more like,
I've been having to like pull you back from the edge a couple times.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, as always, we are so thankful for the army that we already have built. Mm-hmm. We are hoping to continue building it, not just for my safety, but we do know that there's, a ton of people out there who have this experience, who maybe haven't read this book or don't understand what it is that they even went through. They just feel alone. We need to reach the people that are there to help them as well. So again, always grateful, always thankful, and until next time.
If you or someone you know is stuck in a trafficking situation and needs help, please reach out to the National Human Trafficking Hotline by calling 1-888-373-7888 or text HELP, H-E-L-P, to 233-733.